So this is the last evening of the retreat, the session together, and creates a certain sense of occasion to somehow complete or culminate or tie things up. So that you have a way of noting to yourself what seems significant, what seems important, how you organize, so I have kind of pointed to the quality of the organizer as a kind of compulsion, where he organises too quickly without actually having, unpacked and laid out what's there and really explored it. So often we organise, we're herding the sheep before we even know we have any sheep. so we just. But organisation is a necessary and valuable asset, and to be able to keep that sense of flexibility about how one is a custodian of Dhamma, of one's practice, of one's clearing of karma, of one's laying down of the burden, of one's coming out of the constrictions, and when you make the notes. So I've certainly tried to encourage people to just even saying like write a postcard to yourself, 10 points on it, or what was your retreat about, what seemed came up, what seemed significant, what seemed important, and then you, so that you have something to take away, because kind of estimate the value of such a situation. Maybe you felt you haven't really, done a tremendous amount of meditation, or you haven't been so clear or whatever, but you'd be surprised just being in these contexts where many things are taken away. It's a renunciation context. Just this in itself does allow things to shift and shake around and be seen. Just the sense of we're not plugging in, we're not busy doing stuff. We try to create a spacious routine, so we're not even busy meditating on some another project, another task, another set of targets and goals to achieve and things like that. I do see the whole thing as a time for like a natural unfolding and listening in to what is constrictive, what is familiar old patterns that you're fed up with, really, that are not getting anywhere, and where does the new life come from? This is something quite natural, organic. And then how do you organize to make sure you don't forget that, you don't go back to the old patterns, the old habits. So you're sort of making note, there's something precious here. So to organize. And interestingly enough, because I'm part of this whole retreat, so I'm sitting here doing my bit and interested to see what comes up in my awareness and in my relationship with you all. What happens there out of this sense of, trying to support, encourage, be a custodian for you. And so what I've noted, what I've sensed is, coming to this evening, and interesting enough, feeling now's the time for real, clarity and bring things down. I recognize my brain has gone foggy. Oh dear. Come on. Now it's gone foggy. So then, you know, I can. Rain's gone foggy. And just recognizing that sense of wanting to, you know, come out with something nice and clear and helpful, and feeling, oh dear, yeah, brain's gone foggy. And okay, you know, then, right, this is what I'm with. And the feeling of any obligation or disappointment that my brain's done this. That it should come up with something else. Think, no, well, that doesn't do any good. Just relax. Yeah, have a pleasant evening. I'm sorry, I suggest you do the same. But having sat with that for half an hour. Oh yes, well, there is something I could say. That probably won't come out as good as it should, but it's about organisation. And somebody this today very kindly, because I, you know, I enjoy these sessions of what's being said, and it does spark things off. And somebody saying about, you know, boundaries and you know, around obligations and even of helping others, and the need to establish boundaries of attention, how one attends, what one attends to. And this is very significant, particularly as we leave retreat, where in a way the boundaries have been established for you. You know, boundaries of the retreat centre, the boundaries of the precepts, the boundaries of behaviour, your living space, and really there's nothing much for you to do. It's all there, you're held, it's safe, you're held in a safe place, which is fantastic, that's a great offering. But then, you know, you've got to recognise, well, now, you know, you have to look into that area yourself. Now, this is the process. What's activated in this is a process called, what I call it, deep attention, or wise attention, appropriate attention. Yoni Soma Manasikara is the Pali word for it. Sometimes an overlooked factor, but actually very significant, because it is that which establishes a place for mindfulness. The mindfulness naturally or currently gets a lot of the attention in terms of people's interest. Mindfulness is a buzzword, but sometimes people confuse mindfulness with the various systems that are used to use mindfulness, such as you might have mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of mind, mindfulness, and you can have different techniques that make this is mindfulness of moment by moment, pinpoint attention on sensations. Your body is being mindful. Yeah, could be. But you know, there are techniques and systems that use mindfulness. You have mindfulness for the military, mindfulness in sport, mindfulness in, I don't know, maybe mugging. You know, mindful mugging courses. Seems to be there's an opening for it, I'm sure, because there's plenty of muggers who could use some coaching. And essentially, it's to bear a particular something in mind. Now, this could be your job, you know, mindful of your job, mindful of your health, mindful of relationships with others. You bear that in mind, you attend to it, you give it attention, you frame it up. Mindfulness of body, mindfulness of breathing, mindfulness of refined sensations, mindfulness of moods and thoughts. What are you going to be mindful of? And deep attention is the quality that, you know, scanning, if you like, the day, the life, the person, what should I really frame up in all this, in all this experiencing, this unfolding experiencing, which we have these sense doors that can open in all directions. We have a mind door that is huge. You can open up in all kinds of directions, past, present, future. It's not contained in space or time. So, you know, there's a huge amount of data that could be coming in. And probably the first thing that one begins to get a sense of, well, there's got to be some restraint here, choosing, because just to be open as a ideology is not a good idea at all. Because you open as you get flooded. Mm-hmm. So one has to say, what do you want to give attention to? And the Buddha said, well, one wisely attends, one deeply attends to subjects that are worthy of deep attention. And what is that? Topics whereby unskillful states do not arise, skillful states arise. Unskillful states have arisen, tend to decline. Skillful states have not arisen, tend to grow. This is how one attends wisely. So what do you look at? What do you listen to? What do you read? Where do you go? Where do you go in town? Where do you go? Who do you, you know? These are things to not just sort of go take for granted, because anything that we connect to, give attention to, that becomes the object of one's mind. It comes into one's heart, mind, one's body, mind, and there's naturally there's effects of that. And to, you know, to recognize a sense of scrupulousness, not, you know, uptight, but there's a value. Attention is valuable. It's a valuable asset. And we shouldn't just throw it onto any old thing. You know, let the door swing, flap in the wind, and take in any old thing that comes along. So, just even traveling, I do a lot of traveling and going to different places. I don't do a lot of sightseeing, touring. I mean, I might have the occasional, somebody takes me out for a special thing. By and large, I recognize most of it is just doesn't really merit a great deal of attention. Look at the flight, look at the baggage allowance, get to the gate and just... What needs to be given attention to is what's happening in the body-mind. And this is a time when, of course, one could just be reading something, looking around, doing something other, and using that quality of attention in a not very focused way, careless way. So recognizing that, looking at the opportunity, looking at what's important, significant. So when I was traveling, for example, I was traveling in a minibus in Thailand with a group of monks, and you know, you can look out the window at the stores flashing by, and people on bikes and things like that. Yeah, so I just sat and thought, I'm traveling in a minibus with six or seven monks, my friends, feeling comfortable and safe with my friends. Focus on that. That's the meditation. You know, beings who are committed to precepts, beings, it's not really a lot of ideas, just the sense of being in good company. And that's all that's necessary. You don't need to look at lots of stuff and just sit and focus on that. Or I might sit and bring to mind beings, people, yeah, who one has concern for, affection for, grateful for, dwell in that. Much better than looking at another flight magazine or watching stuff flash by the window, which is not going to do me any good, really. It's not wrong. Certainly not wrong, it's just my bother. And so, in this way, one does find, well, I find there are many, many times a day when I can, meditate, if you like. I mean, it's not sort of sitting there, bolt upright, focusing on refined sensations in the body, but it's a sense of there's awareness, there's attentiveness, there's heedfulness, and there's a sense of what's helpful, what's not helpful. And maybe this isn't, fantastic, but it's at least there's a choice. And it could be that way, which would be just be so what, or it could be something where that one arrives in a collected, composed way. One hasn't just blown energy out all over the place. So my last flight here from Singapore, it's quite a long flight, and sitting out, those little seats weren't designed for bodies like this. You sit there for a while, you don't want to watch the videos, it's just people getting shot and shouting at each other. And then they treat, I don't want to eat the food because it's not. So I ended up just going to the galley and doing half an hour Qigong, standing there. These four little air stewardess kind of skirting through this strange, grotesque figure standing on the side of the galley, his arms out. But she did very well, really. And I was doing it to one side, so it didn't get in the way. I thought, well, that's what I can give attention to. I can just give attention to this body, feeling the energy in it. Then I'm containing it, collecting it, gathering it, and looking after it. So, arrived in Johannesburg, reasonable state of mind and body, so that I was able to just, after a, 10-hour flight or so, and a rather slow process through Johannesburg Airport, because we got there and all the electricity blew, so it was people bumbling around in the darkness trying to find out what was going on. So there was that. And then just getting into Johannesburg, being looked after, and then a 45-minute nap, and that was enough. Because I hadn't just, squandered energy. So there is you can use attention to keep your energy intact. You all need it, and it goes out into everything you give attention to. And it seems to me that, by and large, you people, you're bushed, you're tired, you're shot, you kind of... And you do too much, and there's too much going on in your lives, more than you can really handle. And then the mind just gets stuck in it, thinking of it all the time, because it wants to know what to do. About this, about that, what about this, about that, about her, about that, about what can I do about it? And so you stay stuck in that. And say, what to do is to conserve your energy. That's what to do. Look after your home base, that's what to do. Establish this, otherwise the rest of it isn't going to work at all. And maybe during this retreat, what I would really be happy to hear was that you have found, you've acknowledged that, the need for self-regeneration, you could say protection or custodianship, learn to look after yourself. And you learn to recognize you have to have time to gather energy. You can't just keep throwing it out on all kinds of good things, needed things, important things, urgent things, it doesn't stop. And your mind keeps remembering another important, urgent thing because it gets stuck in that loop and proliferates. So you just recognize that sign, you know, that quality, where there's always that pressure or push to, you know, and become, make something happen, fix something, sort somebody out, remember the next thing. That, you know, that scenario, and you make different flavors of it, but that scenario, you can't stay in that zone. If you do, you get locked in it, but it's going to run you down, and you'll never get it done. You'll never get to the end of it. That's called samsara. It just goes on. And the sense of being able to, feeling it's your, not just your rights, your responsibility to viveka, to disconnect from that. Not as some final statement, but certainly as some negotiation. Now is the time. That's enough. I can feel the stress level. You know, naturally, we can't exactly say, you know, 3 minutes and that's all, we're going to go over. But that's okay. You know, it's not about being absolutely razor sharp on it. We do overextend for the welfare of others, and that's fair enough. We do walk the extra mile, and that's beautiful. But then, you know, you have done that. Okay, now's the time. You've got to start looking around for where does the discharge occur. You know, that must be the priority. So to find that. Wisely attending to the texture and the quality of one's mind. So we wisely attend to context, situation, to you know, what around us is worth giving attention to. We also wisely attend, we begin to know our karmic patterns, and with wise attention we recognize that and say, yeah, you know, Joe, you've been here before, you know that pattern. It's now time to look for some time to put it down. This is the function of wise attention, to be a guardian for us. And then we can frame up with mindfulness. Okay, this is a theme to be mindful of. And just again to emphasize, mindfulness itself is not a technique, it's a natural function of mind. It's called one of the universal properties of mind. There's always something, mind always frames things up. So it's not a technique. You can have techniques like, you know, like we have muscles and strength. We can have techniques that develop particular muscles and strengths. That's true. But those techniques are not muscles and strength. They are things to develop them. And you can use techniques and systems to direct mindfulness in certain ways. That's all fair enough. But it doesn't mean that if you don't do the technique, you can't be mindful. Yeah. Mindfulness is a natural function of the mind. You frame something up. The issue really is not about mindfulness, it's about what is the mind anyway, and what is the action of framing things up. Well, the action of framing things up, of establishing mindfulness, is called deep attention. It decides, not that, not that, not that, stay with this. Now, this could be a thought, a recollection, a physical sensation, an awareness of context. It could be anything that you just, right, there it is. How's that? And you bear it in mind. Now, when you bear something in mind, mindfulness is different from attention. Attention is the measure, the measuring stick. It creates a frame of, it's that which creates a frame of reference. So it's a precursor to mindfulness, and there can be wrong attention as well as right attention, as well as deep attention, and mindfulness will just follow unwise attention. So we can be mindful, bear in mind things that are not skillful, or don't, or even aren't getting to the point, you know. You're missing the point of what we should be being mindful of. So I like to tell this very simple story because it's a funny story about a young chap I knew who was at a retreat centre, and he was doing this very, very detailed mindfulness practice of noting sensations in the hands and the movements of the body and the qualities of how moment by moment things happen. He had this sense of mindfulness being a moment by moment scrutiny of what came into attention. And yeah, you can do that. So he had that. And he was doing his walking up and down slowly, and he had this thought arose in his mind. Lovely thought, make a cup of tea for the teacher. Make a cup of tea for some thought. No. Make a cup of tea for teacher, skillful thought, note, let the thought go, move, turn round, move towards the door. Move towards the door, lifting, walking, door handle, noticing door handle, turning door handle, pulling door handle back. Sound of door creaking, yeah. Concern about upsetting other people, note that, let it go, walk through door. Go walking down, see kitchen. Kitchen, no kitchen, awareness of kitchen. Come to hot water tank. Yeah. See hot water tank, no hot water tank. Yeah. And where the tea urn, hand moving towards spigot, faucet. Hand turning spigot, noting something wrong. Noting no cup, water going on floor. So, did the man have mindfulness? Yeah, I think he certainly, it sounds like it, quite impressive, really. But the attention wasn't appropriate. It wasn't open enough to really survey what's needed to make a cup of tea. That is a cup and some tea. Yeah, so the old question comes up, could you mindfully rob a bank, you know? Noting bank. Noting gun, noting, you know, this kind of thing. So, well, you know, you might do, but it'd be called wrong mindfulness. Because the proper attention hasn't been placed, like, which is a very, you know, which deep attention connects to right view. Right view, which is, there is a result of good and bad deeds, there's a moral sense to it, there are consequences to what I do, therefore perhaps be mindful of not robbing a bank will be better. Noticing that urge and realising this is not skillful, that might be better. And again, with mindfulness, it can seem to be something that's, because this sense of having something that's quite, you know, rational and ability to structure where we put attention, there's a nice kind of clean sense to it, you know, there's a nice sort of scientific sense to it. But unfortunately, well, this isn't the mind. Well, this is only one aspect of mind. And so we say, you know, really to be mindful means being really relating things to the mind. not just to the rationality process aspect. And what is mind? Well, again, the English word has certain nuances. The Pali word is citta, and it means a range of things. It means something that has intention, something that is affected, something that's sensitive, something that's responsive. It's not even a thing. It's a dynamic of being affected, responding, sensitive, empathic, having impulses for good and bad, being affected by anxiety and joy. That's citta. You know, it's the spot where I am. And this is what, when we are mindful, attention presents a suitable object to bear in mind, to take into this place and know it, sense it. That's, you know, to right mindfulness, or samma samadhi, or proper or completed or most fulfilling mindfulness is that. It takes, so that we are able to know and sense the causes and effects of our actions. And that's invaluable. The causes and effects, the conditions that trigger our actions and the results of them. Then you're really doing something massively valuable, because a lot of the triggers of our actions, we haven't examined them. Oh, well, you're supposed to do this, aren't you? I always do it this way. Well, why? Well, everybody does it like this. Are you sure everybody does like this? Or one of the great ones is, it needs to be done. It. Where's that? And it needs to be done easily translates into, I've got to do it, which is a different thing altogether. So when things transfer into the third person, it or they expect me to do this. Have you really? Is that what's happening now in your mind? Is there a whole group of people sitting in there saying, we expect you to do this? I don't think so. I think the they is actually you. I think the it is you, not something out there, not an abstraction, but what does that mean? Well, it means the feeling of guilt. Oh, that's interesting. That's not skillful, you know? Or it means the feeling of, I need to prove I'm okay. I make sure I don't deserve. That's interesting. When we really uncover the hot spot of the mind, and instead of transferring into they or I always or everybody does or they it needs or, yeah, or this was the this was the plan, we take it into abstract, we take it to the felt experience. And is the felt experience, there's a real interest and joy or warmth or sense of determination and yes, I want to be there for it. Or is it just this kind of, I suppose I've got to, or they want me to, or it ought to be, or life's like that, or, you know, or you can't just do what you want all your life, you've got to, you know, one of these kind of little nagging phrases from somewhere. So you start to reveal that. And this is, then another quality comes in called Dhamma Vijaya. Dhamma Vijaya means you explore Dhammas. And Dhammas mean, in this sense, moments of experience, moments of citta experience, the real essence of citta experience. Right? What's the point, the living point there that's actually resonating, touching? Mm. So this is a very valuable and a practice that requires deep attention. It's so certainly one. It's good to have time, even on retreat or not on retreat, where you just run through some of your messages, some of these recorded messages, and with their sounds and their moods. And how's that feel? How's that? What's the essence of that? You know, Yoni Somni Sikara helps this process of getting to the point, and then in which I explore that particular point. I think I've mentioned on occasion when you get these narratives, these thought streams running through, two, which are quite complex. This is called the papancha process, where things become complex and multifold. What's the one word that sums this whole thing up? What's the one word that would sum this up? It might be busy, or it might be problem, or it might be excited, or it might be, whatever. These aren't necessary. It's not kind of like, we're not looking at academic standards, just ordinary street level language to describe. What's the one word that sums this up? Hungry, needy, bored, excited, full, rich, warm. But generally these running trains of thought, they're running because they are actually aspects of dukkha, and they are not feeling warm, feeling contented. They are feeling something's missing, restless, groundless. Don't know where I am. Something like that. So, therefore, and so this mind is running. So you just, and it doesn't really matter what word you use, but you don't need to think about getting it right. You just start to try and sum it up in your own words, the one word that really sums up that whole process, that train of thought. What's the mood of it? Fed up, disappointed in myself. Okay, that's great. Because now you can get to the point. And you get to the point and you explore that point. You frame it up. So as I was saying, just another example, sitting here and feeling rather tired and not having a lot, feeling rather foggy in the brain, and then think, evening, to give a talk and say something. I was going to give a talk, what should I talk about? Don't like the sound of that. What's that? What's the point? Sense of obligation. How's that feel? Not skillful. So just to relax. Maybe there'll be something to say, maybe there won't, but that sense of, suppose I'm supposed to come up with something that's not skillful. It's coming from the wrong place. Just relax, be with that. Let yourself feel a bit sort of unfocused and foggy. The point here is to relax. You've said enough, day after day. Surely you've said enough by now. Yeah. Yeah, true. Yeah. Just relax. Oh, well, I could talk about. So, once you come out of that negative mindset, yeah, sure, there's people here, something to say, you know, all right, boundaries, so, you know, so it just kind of comes back. So these are not, you know, none of this is ultimate fixed positions. It's just knowing the point to touch to where one's going into unskillful states, often unexamined unskillful states, because by and large, I reckon most of us would not act deliberately upon an unskillful state. You might accidentally lose your temper, but I imagine most of us would not notice a state of mind was unskillful and then go ahead on it, if you really knew it. So we go ahead feeling, you know, slightly negative, compulsive, or people want, or I'm supposed to do this, and it's not skillful. But it doesn't mean I'm never going to do anything. It means just right now, you need to release that state and review when that state's released. Review the context, see the scenario when that state has been dissolved. See what comes up. This is a way which one is able to reorganize. Instead of having a strategy there you've got to meet, that's not skillful. Relax, let that pass. 1 minute, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, half an hour, day, you know, whatever. And then you can reorganize from a wholesome place. And it helps one to keep reviewing, actually, what is valuable for me now? What is beautiful now? What is possible now? And over time in life, those things change. This process of Dhamma Vijaya, really coming into the real point of the citta at any moment, when it's stressed, suffering, coming beneath the abstractions into the actuality of it, owning up to the reality of where you're really at. So that's part of it. You have to touch the reality of it. I should, I ought to, I want, I need to, people want me to. It ain't there. You know, for now. Okay, and own up to it. And then vijaya is a process of handling, carefully handling that which has been revealed, touched into, revealed itself, the truth of your citta at this moment, to be handled, because that's the truth of it. And out of the truth, all that can arise is a skillful state. When there's no delusion, when there's no compulsion, all that can arise is a skillful state. Mostly, the major problem is delusion, aspects of delusion. Greed is a problem, probably we're aware of that, flaring up. Hatred is a problem, probably we can recognize gross hatred and subtler levels of hatred. As you meditate, you begin to recognize ill will you carry towards yourself. But delusion is subtle and difficult to see. We need Dhamma Vijaya, Yoni Soma Nisikara, deep attention, and wise exploration to reveal it. The Buddha himself said of these characteristics, you know, greed and lust are, they are relatively easy to see and to pull back from. And hatred, relatively highly blameworthy, relatively easy to see. Delusion is difficult to see. And mostly what happens, how delusion occurs, is the mind goes into these abstracts or creates fantasy scenarios of what I should, what they want, the future is, what people or everybody does, you know, fantasy notions that cloud and mask what's really happening. And the really inspiring thing to recognize is if you're true, if there's truth in the citta, all that can arise is a skillful state. It may not be the skillful state that you're looking for, but it will be a skillful state. And it may be just a sense of kindness, goodwill. It may be a sense of clarity. It may be a sense of confidence. It may be a sense of just, well, what you need to do right now is just get grounded. And when I say skillful state, this is not like for the rest of my life. This means for now, this is the appropriate thing. Get grounded, otherwise you're not going to be fit and capable. Once you touch the point and you feel the resonance of that, citta is resonant. If it doesn't resonate with this, then it hasn't really touched yet. It's still just an idea, theory. The real thing, the real aspect of citta has always got a resonance to it. There's a slight shimmer of recognition. Subtle maybe, but heard it. And then our obligation, our duty, our truthfulness is, well, to have to follow that. Even if it's just for the next 1 minute, 5 minutes, 1 hour. So these, by no means, it's not giving you abstract notions of the rest of my life, but getting you in touch with your truthfulness. And if you live in accordance with your truthfulness, only skillful states can arise. There must be progress in terms of Dhamma. And there must be a beautiful unfolding for you in a way that you may not have recognized. Explore, handle. And remember, exploring Dhammas, handling them, and we must be careful even what we call experience. So, you know, like we say, oh, angry, feeling angry. Generally, if you say that word, you're going to say, stop, don't feel that bad. The reflex is so immediate, you know. Feeling sad, don't, you know, there's this reflex that occurs. So sometimes you just kind of, what it actually is the felt sense of that, like a gathering or a pushing or a rushing or a warming or a fluttering. So you really get into the quality of it as a Dhamma. The citta doesn't use the language of the brain. It doesn't use that language. It doesn't use that language. It uses language of perception, which means feeling space, feeling strong, feeling shaky, feeling warm, feeling... It feels. The saying is, all Dhammas, all moments of direct experience crystallize, converge on feeling. If it's still out in the verbal form, that's okay, but you've got to track the verbal form to what really happens is happening in your heart. What does he want to do? This gets really interesting. And somebody was saying today, you know, just experiencing tension as we do tension in Qigong, and just translating, instead of calling the word tension, because as soon as you say the word tension, the idea is, well, relax, bad, don't want to be tense. But with Qigong, we deliberately go into places of tension and saying, well, just call it heat, because it is, heat in the arms. Just imagine that heat. And suddenly it's no longer a negative thing we have to get rid of. So the feeling, and around the feeling, the perception. The perception is a designation, what it's called. And the designation is extremely significant. All mental experience comes from perception, from designations. The stab in the heart is a perception. So as we begin to get closer to what's really going on, then we have Dhammavijaya, and there's a quality of energy that can gather into that to explore. And the citta moves towards truth, moves towards completion, moves to the end of, inclines towards the end of suffering. Because that's what it's supposed to do. That's its nature. That's what it's been seeking all along, isn't it? Nobody wants to suffer. It's been seeking it all along, but it's been seeking it by looking in the wrong way. We're looking in the wrong way for it, looking in the wrong place. And it's actually very simple. Well, it's simple, but it's not easy to be that on the mark. Now, so this is a process for you to consider as we come to the time when, you know, you can loosen things up, think things over. You're going to be revisiting your life messages. Probably they've been coming back, but now they come with a certain sense of, hey, tomorrow, you know, things start. Before you jump, listen to those. You know, it's such and such a morning, job begins, or I need to find a job, or I've got to fix the car, whatever it is. Just listen to those messages, and before you jump, what's happening? What's really happening with this? And then you can almost do the same thing, but from a slightly different angle. So, organizing. But organizing around truth, the truth of the citta, rather than organizing around notions and abstractions and theories. Some of these abstractions and theories, naturally, you know, we struggle with what is compassion, what is kindness, what is goodwill. And again, you know, somebody was mentioning this, you know, compassion, trying to help other people, and eventually feeling really tired of helping everybody, trying to help people, and feeling rather tired, and then starting to get a bit exhausted, and then slightly, you know, impatient, wanting to get it together, and a bit frustrated, and then sooner or later feeling slightly negative about it all. And then the sense of, well, I shouldn't feel that way, I should be more compassionate. Because compassion as a theory is a beautiful idea, but as a direct experience, so there you realize, well, the compassion has to be carefully held, and then you have to listen to it. And you listen to the quality of compassion rather than, you have the problem there, the problem of, well, there are, you know, you name them, other people's problems, you have that there, and you can sense that, and you can sense yourself being moved by that. And the compassion, certainly to allow oneself to be moved in the heart, that doesn't necessarily mean action. Action, certainly based on compassion, has to be bounded with wisdom. And wisdom creates, to others as to myself, wisdom is the ability to discern when skillful or unskillful states. And so that with that quality of compassion, we begin to be wise about it and recognize, well, it is impossible for any of us to enter somebody else's mind and change it. Isn't that so? It's probably very rare that you can enter somebody else's body and fix something if you're a trained physician. It's extremely unlikely that you can, you know, enter into, you know, a society or a neighborhood and make everything work. You know, a problem area. Very unlikely that you can do that. When you consider that perhaps you can't even sort yourself out. So how are you going to do it to... But you see these problems here. Oh my goodness. Yeah, that's certainly there's the arising of that sense of concern and compassion. But when it comes down to the pragmatism, well, if you can't sort yourself out, how are you going to sort everybody else out? So you recognize, yeah, is it possible that just standing in the being in the presence of with a compassionate heart and not knowing what to do, that out of that something can arise? And maybe this is where we have to be quite careful of boundary, like, I cannot fix you. You know, that doesn't happen. But I also don't find it helpful to shut you out. That's not right either. To stand in the presence of, with an open heart, listening. How to organize an action. Waiting. And sometimes, you know, these actions based upon the meaning of compassion, which is sympathy with, which is basically just a sense of, yes, that sounds difficult. Yes, oh, that sounds painful. That feels, I'm moved by that. This is the quality of compassion. And it may be from that recognition, particularly when you're with people who are suffering, just that they sense that the suffering or their pain is affecting you, is moving you. That may be exactly the quality that's needed for them to feel less alone. Where suffering becomes stuck is when suffering throws us into, I'm on my own, I'm helpless, I can't do anything, I'm stuck, I'm finished. I'm stuck in this. And then the proliferation starts. And maybe the first primary quality of compassion is to resonate and even to say, actually, this is the same for everybody. This is painful. Everybody gets this. Everybody gets this in essence. And you must say that again and again until a person hears it. You may have remembered the story of Kisa Gotami in the suttas, just to bring it to mind again. It's the her baby has died, so she's in tremendous grief and anguish. Her lovely baby has died, and she goes to the Buddha very distraught. You know, maybe this holy man can bring him back to life. You know, they've got special powers. Maybe he can bring him back to life. Maybe he can solve this thing. And the Buddha says, yeah, I think I can help you. Go to the local village and get a mustard seed. Bring it back to me. Oh, no, no problem. They must have mustard seed. Oh, right, no, just a minute. When you go to the house, get a mustard seed from a house where nobody's died. Okay, she rushes down, knocks on the door. Can you give me a mustard seed? Sure. Oh, has anybody died in your house? Oh, please. You know, my husband died last week. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Next house, doctor. Can I have a mustard seed? Yeah, sure, sure. I'll give you a mustard seed, just a minute. Has anybody died here? My son got killed in the war last month. I'm still sorry about it. Okay, thank you. Next door, and so on. You know, please don't remind us of our grief. You know, our beloved mother passed away last year. We're still in pain. She goes to the whole village. And by the time she got to the end of the village, her grief, her distress has subsided into compassion. We're in this together. And she goes back to the Buddha, and the Buddha says, yeah, now the suffering has ended, hasn't it? You can now bury the baby. So suffering is different from sorrow, in a way. Sorrow can change into compassion when we sense, you know, we're not out there alone. In a way, you know, but it's necessary to have what the Buddha provided in that situation. It wasn't just compassion, it was the pragmatic wisdom to keep bringing the person to the point, again and again. Acting it, presenting it, bringing it to the point again and again, until they got it. They were able to cure their own suffering, not even by doing anything, but just by resonating in accordance with truth. And this is then actually, in a way, far deeper than just fixing the problem. If we were able to help people to resonate in accordance with truth, they gain in confidence, they gain in autonomy, they gain in understanding, and so they gain enormously in that. And it may be, of course, the case that we can, from that, oh yeah, we could do this, we could do something, you know. Action again can proceed from the moment of truth. And just to bring each other to that moment of truth. And see if action can then proceed from there. Again, it's another example of how the reflex to jump into an action occurs before deep attention, before getting to the point, before exploration. And whenever that happens, the suffering doesn't end. You just push it along the road a little longer. So these are important faculties to cultivate, so that one, as it says, in this world of difficulty, one remains in touch, confident, true, and you know, it's called the highest blessing.